Okay, continuing the saga of addiction and redemption, awakening to your hero's journey. Again, reporting to you with the flu. Gonna crank out two in a row. I'm Dave Keenest. This is brought to you by Keenest Coaching. Whoever the woman was who sent me the email who's been listening to this, thanks for sending that to me. I do not know you, so it's kind of awesome to know that this story is getting into the ears of all sorts of people. I can't remember your name. I would acknowledge you if I could remember it. I don't feel like pulling up my email at this second, but thanks to all who've been listening. And we left off with me stealing a car, Grand Theft Auto, without a driver's license, on probation, for felony possession. And had I been caught, what would have happened? But I didn't get caught. And why didn't I get caught? I don't know. Who knows? I mean, maybe my guardian angel's best job, or maybe my guardian angel just decided that jail wasn't the thing that was going to save me. Maybe my guardian angels were predicting the future and they knew what was coming. And so they were just affording me, I think, what are referred to as signal graces. Who knows? I mean, my luck had to run out a little bit, but it didn't go as terribly as it could. So as the winter dragged on, it just got worse and worse and worse, particularly when I didn't have any money. You know, sometimes what I would do is I would just go into my dad's room and I would take his change. He would collect his change. I knew where he kept his change. And, you know, sometimes there would be $4, $5, $6, $7 in there, and I would take that money and I would go to the Jewel and I would put it through the change machine and I would get cash, and then I'd have like $7. I pawned video games. I had a Nintendo DS and I sold it, and that gave me money. I had the little individual games. I had a game called Metroid and I sold that. But sometimes I was just out of money completely, and I didn't know what to do. You know, and this is where it gets fucked up. This is where it just gets really disturbing and weird and filthy and gross. You know, mind you, I'm still working at the restaurant. I'm still somehow managing to pull that thing off. But there were some days that I didn't have to work. There were some days I woke up, you know, a few hours before the liquor store opened, and I couldn't wait. You know, and this is where I got into, like, drinking mouthwash. Like, I remember going into the bathroom and seeing a bottle full of mouthwash, Scope or whatever it is, and seeing the alcohol content. The alcohol content's not that low. It's like 20% or something. So mouthwash is like 40 proof, which is like half of vodka. Right? And I remember just guzzling that shit, like pouring it into the shot glass, which is the, you know, the top of the mouthwash, which is like the Scope container, the Scope cup, and just drinking it and getting drunk off mouthwash at like 8:15 in the morning, 8:30 in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, who knows what time it was. And it's just the nastiest drunk. It's just the nastiest fucking feeling. And I remember also one of the days when I got drunk off the mouthwash, I had set myself up for my friend Chris to come pick me up to take me to some gathering that would help for me to not drink. And I couldn't make it past 8:30 without a drink. I just couldn't do it. He was supposed to pick me up at like 1 or 2. And I couldn't make it until 1 or 2. I couldn't make it 5 minutes after waking. That's how helpless I was. That's how powerless I was. You know, and there was one day where I went down in the basement and I was rummaging through the workroom, this old workshop that we had that we didn't really use, and I saw a can of Scotch Guard sitting in there. And this is how fucked up my thinking was. This is how sick and demented my thinking was. I thought to myself, yeah, that kid Chris I went to high school with died from Scotch Guard, so it must be pretty good. Maybe I'll try what he did, but I won't die because I'm invincible. This is kind of my thinking. This stuff killed this kid, therefore I'll do what he did. But I won't die. That's the difference between him and me. And so what I did was just took the Scotch Guard and I squirted it into the lid, sprayed it into the lid, and then held the lid over my nose and inhaled. And I sat there and I went through an entire can. It took me probably an hour to go through this can of Scotch Guard. And it just didn't get me as high as heroin. Wasn't really a good feeling. When I got done with that can, I could feel it like dripping down the back of my throat into my lungs. I could taste it. And I could feel it running out of my nose, like dripping off my top lip, like Scotch Guard mixed with mucus. And I'm just sitting there in my parents' basement with this empty can of Scotch Guard. You know, and this is when it gets even more perverse, because at some point I went to the doctor in Glen Ellyn, just this little Glen Ellyn family medical clinic that was right there on the corner of Park and Duane. I just went in there one day and was like, yeah, I need some Adderall and some Xanax. And the guy, I'm like, I have anxiety and ADD. And the guy's just like, okay. And he just writes me a prescription for this Adderall. And I go and I pick up the Adderall, and they were these little tablets that had these little balls inside of them. Right? These little, remember what like a Dexatrim used to look like? So you would open the capsule and there would be these little balls in there. And so I went and filled the prescription and got it home and opened up the capsules, and these little balls, these little yellow or orange balls came out. And so what I then did was emptied the capsules into a spoon and then added water to the spoon and stirred it all up until the water became the color of the capsules. And then I sucked the water into a syringe and shot it. And there's a name for doing this. It's like I can't remember what they call it, but you used to shoot cocaine in Fort Collins. And the way that you shoot drugs is you concoct the mixture in a spoon, right? So you empty it out into a spoon. And then what you do is you take a little piece of cotton, like a little piece of a Q-tip or a cotton ball, little tiny piece, and you throw it into the liquid. And then you suck the liquid through the cotton ball. The cotton ball acts as a filter. And it prevents the tip of the needle from getting dull. And then you find a vein. I was always relatively thin, so my veins stuck out. It was really easy for me to find them. You find a vein, and you don't really need to use a tourniquet. Or I never had to take off my belt like you see in the movies and like wrap it around your arm. Some people do. I never had to do that. But you find a vein, and you stick the... You have to what's referred to as burp the needle. So once you get the liquid into the needle, you hold it upside down, just like imagine a doctor preparing a shot to give to a patient, and you flick it. And when you flick the syringe, the air bubbles float to the top, and then you squeeze the plunger, it's called. You squeeze the plunger until a little droplet comes out the tip. When that little droplet comes off the tip, you're ready to go. You stick it in your arm, and then what you have to do is you have to use your thumb to pull back on the plunger. The plunger is the part that you push in. You pull back on the plunger, and when you pull back on the plunger, you see blood go into the syringe, into the barrel, it's called. And it mixes with the drugs. And when the blood goes into the barrel and mixes with the drugs, you know you're good. And then you squirt it in, you inject it in. And that's how you shoot drugs. But I wasn't even shooting heroin at this point. I just got some fucking Adderall. And it wasn't even like powdered form. It was these weird little balls. And my psycho thinking realized that I could take these balls and soak them in water and swirl them around and inject this Adderall and get high. Now, how fucked up is that? How fucked up is that? Good news is it took my mind off of heroin. Because it got me high as a motherfucker. It got me fucked up. And I went through all 30 of those, or 60 of those. It was probably 30. I went through all 30 of those in, you know, probably less than a day. And this is the extent of where this addiction had taken me. Mouthwash, Scotch Guard, injecting Adderall. It's one thing to inject OxyContin or heroin. It's another thing to like inject Adderall that's like crushable. It's a whole other thing to invent a use for something that's just outside of the scope of even most drug addicts thinking. Like, I tell a drug addict this at rehab, and they're like, dude, you're fucked up. I could tell that to a meth head, and they'd be like, dude, you're fucked up. And this is how demented my thinking was. This is the extent to which all that is not good had taken me over. This is how filthy I had become. You know, and I started to get abscesses. You know, so there were a couple of times where I would get these golf balls. I'd wake up in the morning and there would be a golf ball sized abscess. Just a giant pussy like cyst looking thing, bright purple, sticking out of my arm, like my forearm. It's just disgusting from sticking essentially dirty needles in there. You know, not dirty that other people had used. The whole HIV thing, by the way, with drug use is overrated. Like, to get HIV, you'd have to be pretty fucking stupid to get HIV from using needles, because nobody shares needles. Like, people quit sharing needles as soon as HIV came out. You know, like, they haven't done it in a long time. And they're free. You can get them anywhere. You go to Walgreens and buy them for, like, $3 or something for 10. They're really cheap. But when you use them over and over again, they get contaminated. And so what I was getting was these infections in my arms, and I would have to go to the doctor and to get them drained with a lie that I made up. I remember one time I went to the doctor to get this abscess drained, and I told him that my ex-girlfriend had stabbed me with a pencil, and that's what caused the infection, and they believed me, and he gave me Vicodin. He believed me so much he gave me painkillers. This is how cunning and charming I was, and this is how stupid the doctor was. Because I would have fucking known what was going on. So this is just like, put yourself into the consciousness, the experience of consciousness that I just described, and imagine what that would be like. That's like Gollum from Lord of the Rings. It's like a creature. It's like a monster. That's just this disgusting thing. You know, there's a story called The Metamorphosis, and it's this story about this guy. I think it's by Kafka, actually. It's a story of this guy who turns into a bug. And he's living in his parents' house. And one day he just starts turning into like this giant cockroach. And his parents, and he's living in this bedroom, and his parents, they don't know what to do with their bug child. So they have to keep him in his bedroom, and he just transforms. He goes through this metamorphosis into this giant, huge, human-sized cockroach creature. And that's really what was happening to me. It was like this, it wasn't like a caterpillar turning into a butterfly. It was like a human turning into a cockroach. It was just turning into this disgusting creature. One of the lines I have from some of my writing is regarding what my parents were thinking. Like, what were they telling the neighbors? And one of the lines that I have is, how do you hide a dead son? How do you explain that you've got this cockroach living in your house? My mother's always been obsessed with appearances. That's a whole other story. I don't blame her for it. But this is what my life had become, and become a cockroach. And this is just getting further and further and further away. So thanks again for listening. This has been another episode of Addiction and Redemption. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.